To give you a little introduction on what I'm going to do, I have a lot of information about young adults. This is more of a here they are, and this is what their culture is like, and this is how you can push buttons, here's how you can actually help them, here's how you can minister to them in just a generalized way. There are a lot of generalizations, sort of. I'm going to give you a challenge that kind of reverses that statement too, because we're trying not to. But it is more of to introduce you to young adults. Some of this, I mean, I've sat through this material I got from this ministry called Verge Ministries. Verge Ministries, I think it's on the bottom of your pages there that give you the information. They're from the Minneapolis, Twin Cities, Minnesota area. I've gone to some of their workshops. This is a lot of their information because they were describing young adults. Their ministry is specifically to help churches have young adult ministry that is thriving. And this is an introductory to it. The biggest and hardest thing to do in young adult ministry is actually to tell you how to do it. As we've been seeing with small groups, it's very unique to every situation, every church, every circumstance. So this is more of just to give you a glimpse of young adults. This is just millennials. Millennials are like from the 1980s to early 2000s, to give you a glimpse of that's the kind of years that people give them. Oldest millennials, they have no meaningful recollection of the Reagan era, and they do not know he was ever shot. That's kind of like ancient history to young adults. And I sat through that in the first statement. I mean, I listened to that and I go, what? He was shot. I asked Caleb, my cousin, and he goes, he was shot too? So it's history. The oldest of the millennials were 11 when the Soviet Union broke apart, so we really don't remember the Cold War at all. We have no fear of a nuclear war. We've only known one Germany. I don't remember the East and West. Yes, that's kind of the German we know. We're too young to remember a space shuttle blowing up. I knew that it happened, but I don't remember watching it. In our lifetime, we've always had AIDS. That's how it's always been. This one's debatable, maybe because I'm MK. Soda bottle caps have always been screw off, but has not always been screw off, but they've always been plastic. I've had metal quite a bit, but that's also because of Mexico and Costa Rica. Atari predates me, or predates us as millennials. Vinyl records do as well. It's before my time. Star Wars looks very fake, especially the beginning ones, although you could probably talk about the entire Star Wars saga. They look fake, and the special effects are not that impressive to me, or to us. The millennials have we may have heard of an 8-track tape, but we've probably never actually seen or heard one played. I'm still confused on what an 8-track tape is compared to one of those big. Are they vinyl records? The big one that's
no.
Or is that an 8-track tape?
It's like a loop.
Loop.
A big loop.
Oh, okay.
It's a skinnier video.
Got it. See, yeah.
It's a smaller video.
So.
But not video.
I've heard of it. So yeah, the compact disc, the CD was introduced when we were 1 year old, like 1 year old. We've always had an answering machine. We have a recollection of an VHS, but might not. We have no idea what beta is. No idea. I'm surprised that this actually defines me so well. This is not my information. This is the information that was handed to me, and I'm listening to him. Yeah. We can't fathom life without remote control, but I don't know if anyone else could at this moment. We were born the year the Walkman was introduced by Sony. The Tonight Show has always been hosted by either Jay Leno or Jimmy Fallon, although I guess you would have to add him too now, but... popcorn has always been cooked in the microwave. We've never seen Larry Bird play basketball.
Oh my goodness.
True. I look at it and I'm like, look at it, shorts. Holy cow, that's short. The Vietnam War is as ancient history to us as World War I, World War II, or even the Civil War. It is in that same category. As I look back at it, it is actually history. It's history. And it's not something that I've ever seen or experienced. I mean, we see the effects of a lot of that, but never been a part of it.
And let me say something, but we had an exchange student come to our youth group from Vietnam.
Uh-huh.
And we asked him, did he know that the Americans...
Right, this was like 2 years ago.
Yeah. Did he know that the Americans came over there to, you know, to fight a war? Yeah, and he said, no, we don't know anything about that. They didn't even know the Americans came over
there.
Yeah, he was from Vietnam.
Wow.
North or south?
Yeah. Oh, I don't know.
It is amazing to see how generations, you can have certain things that affect you and certain things that don't. And there's a big gap there. And that's today's young adults. Last thing I have is most have never seen or used a rotary dial phone. Although I've definitely enjoyed those periods of time. But that's kind of like a generalized introductory to, like, those are young adults. That's actually the people you're talking about. Those are the things that they know, the things that they don't know. And so we're talking about a unique group of people that have a different lifestyle or just different culture. Now, I could probably ask you about young adults and ask you to define young adults. And we probably could come up with so many different ideas or thoughts or just who they are. One thing that I do kind of want to say as we begin, the challenge is, please don't make conclusive generalizations about the state of young adults today. Mainly because when you make conclusive generalizations, you're doing a sweeping judgment, and a lot of our judgment calls tend to be a little bit more on the negative side than on the positive side. And the encouragement will probably be to, if we do make generalizations, let's try to assess where they are at, and let's try to make positive statements about some of the characteristics they are in a good light, positive light. So I know that we have the struggle, and maybe some of the thoughts that we have are like, all young adults are walking away from their faith. They're not in church. They're walking away. They're not really engaging. They're lost generation somewhat. We could say that no young adults want to work hard. Kind of tell you, don't necessarily jump on that bandwagon, because that might not necessarily be true for all. You could even think, well, young adults never follow through. They're so fickle. They're hard to nail down. I understand that. I work with them. I am one. All young adults are selfish. There definitely is a very consumeristic mentality with them. But or even saying no young adults care about other generations. I just want to say, maybe we have that idea that they may be having some of these characteristics that might be the way that we perceive. But in the sense of the challenge of, let's try not to make any of these sweeping generalizations about young adults, because when we come in a negative light, we might not be able to reach them in a positive impact in a positive way, because there are definitely some things that are very positive about millennials. But millennials, that's the group that we're kind of talking about right here. This is the definition of millennials. I think you have it on your paper. Millennials, they're also known as millennial generation or generation Y, are the demographic cohort following generation X. There's no precise dates when the generation starts and ends. The researchers and commenters are kind of basically starting it at the early 1980s, basically to the early 2000s. It's a very wide range, so I do qualify as that. I don't know, do you qualify in that?
I kind of feel like I'm right at the beginning.
Right at the beginning. Yeah, so some of the statements probably are true to you, but some of them might not be as true.
Right.
Depends on where you are. But
just on the line.
But I have three spiritual journeys of millennials. This comes out of a book called You Lost Me. It's a good book. It has a lot of good research. It talks about three different groups. The Barna Group did a lot of research on these three different groups that called nomads, prodigals, and exiles. It talks about the state of the young adults and kind of their research. They're asking the young adults, where are they at with their spiritual journey? So talking about these, you have the nomads, and the nomads are a group comprised of the 18 to 29 year olds with a Christian background. They walk away from church engagement but still consider themselves to be Christians. So this group is a group that walk away from church engagement but still consider themselves to be Christians. A person in this group typically has trouble identifying with a church or a particular brand, I guess you could say denomination of Christianity, but would consider themselves broadly a Christian. As you can see there, I'll maybe read this because it's a little bit hard to see it. 43% that going to church or being with Christian friends is optional. That's with the nomads group. And that's kind of a true statement, that they believe going to church and being with Christian friends are optional. 25% of them say that faith and religion just aren't important to them at the moment. And then 23% say that they are used, they used to be involved in their church but don't fit there anymore. So they're kind of wandering, they're just not using that as an important aspect of life. So those are the nomads. Prodigals, a second one. Prodigals, on the other hand, are those who have, you could say, lost their faith. This is a group of young adults who have used to claim a personal faith, but no longer claim any Christian belief. They used to have a faith, that, so you maybe the rocky soil, the one that had something, but then it's got snatched away or withered. Used to have a faith, but right now they no longer claim any Christian belief. In many of their answers in the Barna group surveys, they describe themselves as fairly certain they won't ever return to Christianity as well. So they're the prodigals. And the different things here you see, 20% say that they had a negative experience in church or with Christians. 21% of these say that Christian beliefs just don't make sense to them at the moment. Whether they go to school and they get like indoctrinated, or if they go to school and they you know, fall out in that sense, college. And 19% say that their spiritual needs cannot be met by Christianity. So these are prodigals that basically have just taken Christianity and rejected it and said, I'm walking a different direction. Last one are exiles. Exiles is the final category of millennials who struggle with the Christian faith, can be termed as exiles. This group has a tough time finding a place in a church setting, but has chosen to remain within an institutional church context. They feel lost somewhere between their commitments to church and their desire to stay connected to the world around them. These young adults with a Christian background struggle to connect their faith or church with their everyday lives, and yet they continue their Christian faith despite these headwinds. More than one-fifth of millennials with a Christian past, that's 21%, say that they remain Christian and continue to attend a church, but they find the church to be a difficult place for them to live out their faith. So these are exiles. They're around, they're in church, they're present, sort of, but they're struggling a lot with what's going on in church because they see the world around them and they're trying to connect and trying to see. The stats here are interesting because it's 38% say that they want to find a way to follow Jesus that connects with the world they live in. So it's not just have a faith inside the church. They want to know how to take that faith and also put it into practice in their lives, in their workspaces, and where they are at. However, 33% say that God is more at work outside the church than inside, and they want to be a part of it. So one of the things that is very important, as we're going to see, is social justice is an insanely important thing for most of young adults. So they want to be a part of that. And they see it a lot of times outside of the church context. 32% say that they want to be a Christian without separating themselves from the world around them. So that might be more of the negative side of things, where they want to have fingers in both pies. And they're valuing kind of both of those things. Any questions about the nomads, prodigals, or exiles? These are kind of the spiritual journeys of these. There are Christian tones in all three of these groups. We're not necessarily talking about those that have never had a Christian faith. These are all those that have had some contact with Christians or Christian faith in the past. Any questions about nomads, prodigals, or exiles?
Do you think that the church and its ideals and its management principles has created some of these problems? And assuming
it's a good question,
you're maybe going to make some recommendations.
Yeah, it's that that is
that, but haven't we, you know, we haven't disregarded people in that demographic, but we've done things in a traditional way. And that doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Part of the change.
That is an absolutely good question. That's actually the question that I kind of want to lead into, because we're talking about the millennial culture mindset, and part of it is to say here's who they are, and here's how you push buttons, and if you push buttons, you're going to obviously be pushing them away further and further.
Yeah, you push the wrong buttons.
And it might not be an intention, and also might not be necessarily bad, but it might be something to be aware of as you're engaging with this group. Because some of these things, as I'm looking through, I go, yeah, this is kind of what I'm like, and if you push that, I do want to go the opposite way. So it's mainly just we'll address that.
Not to be the devil's advocate here, but the current Supreme Court decision and our reaction to it may have a lot to do with what happens with millennials
yep.
churches.
We could probably
take a stand, and we should take a stand of yep. some sort, I think.
Yes.
But if we take a stand that comes across to them that we're not being God's people,
yep.
we're going to drive more away. So we yep. have to keep that in mind yep. rather than a knee jerk and say, oh, we yep. got to react to this. Yep. We've got to know what we're doing yep. or we're going to have a great church of old people
yeah.
and old kids.
And we could talk about that issue in and of itself and talking yeah, about how do you respond that to young that, adults.
I'm just saying that yeah. that really applies to what you're saying.
Yeah, and I would probably say that young adults want truth and they want people to stand up for convictions. But the how is insanely important to them.
Right.
And if you do it in a way that isn't okay. where their mindset, they, yeah, you were right. You probably will push them.
How did they get this position?
Huh?
How did they come to these feelings?
Well, we'll look into their okay. their cultural mindset because I think that'll help. We'll look at how they are because the next part, understanding the minds of the millennials. I think that's kind of what would help us a little bit when we talk about why they respond the way they respond. This is, I'm sorry, somewhat generalized because I'm trying to sum up young adults. And so you probably will be like, wait a second. I know a young adult who is not. And that's true. I know of some young adults who are not. But on a whole, this is something that they've kind of done research on, and they say, yeah, this is kind of who they are. So the first thing that young adults typically are, they're self-reliant. And when I mean self-reliant, they believe that becoming successful is up to them, and they're not depending on others for help, as they kind of hold. They are the young navigators. They must chart their own course, and they must captain their own ship. It's up to me to create their own well-being is kind of their statement. They'll take that initiative. They want to do that, especially in a career. They value personal experience and are prone to seek out critical thinkers. So they're self-reliant in that matter. You look at them in their young professions, and that's why they're sometimes so hard to nail down, because they're doing this. Secondly, they're empowered adventurers. Research shows that this generation has a confidence that comes from a strong sense of their ability to accomplish things that have been entrusted to them. They think and learn in interactive, nonlinear ways. They are willing to explore. They're willing to search and to navigate. They're willing to kind of just go and experience, travel. I particularly love traveling. I went to London and I was in a hostel. You see so many young adults there. They're willing to kind of go out and experience and share experiences. So they're willing to do those type of things. They're empowered adventurers. Another thing that's interesting about this group is there is a love of family, truly. They seem, it's a surprise, but it's they're relying more on their family as sanctuary against the difficulties of life. They do view their parents as most important source of guidance and emotional support. I kind of see that through a lot of the young adults that I experience in their lives. They do. They have a return value to their family. Maybe not in the way that we'd really, really want them to, but it is starting to swing that way. They do have a love of family that is pretty strong. Another thing is they view relationships as paramount. Now, I know we'll probably say, wait, relationships, they're not always the most effective at doing them because you have the social media aspect of their relationship side. But they do really rely on strong and close personal networks of friends and family. They have a strong desire to be connected with others, friends in school, interest groups, and online virtual communities. They're always constantly wanting to be connected. Whether or not that actually leads to good connection is another thing, but they have a desire to be connected. So that's the positive side of their relationships. They want to be connected. That's so important to them. How they do it might not be the best way, but they want to be connected. So the relationships are important to them. Educational achievement is so big. Their main priority in life is to get a good education. Their core value is personal competence. Some of the hardest things for me with the youth and young adults is to get them to church, because the thing that distracts them is they need to get good grades. And I look at that and I'm like, what? I was never like that. So that's, but that is a huge desire. They want to achieve. They want to succeed, whether in grades or in all of the other things that they put themselves into. It's like 100%, 110%. And it's so hard to like get them to say, okay, I know you really value this. Let's come this way. So yeah, they have a really high educational achievement. They want to do that well. Another thing that I think is very good for this, and this is probably where a lot of the way we respond to things is they have a high value to diversity. So the way we respond to diversity themes is important because they really value diversity like any other generation before. They have a high tolerance for differently held beliefs. It's just the way they were grown up and the way that they were taught, and that's the way that they are. They believe strongly in equal rights. It's just the theme of this generation. How you define equal rights probably will be, that's a big question, but they believe strongly in it. Discrimination against minorities is in the top five issues of why they are very, in which they are very concerned. So they're very interested in that. They know that they're are growing in an increasingly multicultural world. So they see diversity and they're starting to say it's important to address diversity with immigration, with all the other issues that are hot topics. So the way that we respond to diversity is probably important. One other thing about them is they're consumers. Oh man, they know how to shop, literally, anywhere. It's so easy, they do it so well. And the other thing about them, and this is different because the advertisement has had to change for this generation, they're not going to be fooled into buying products that don't meet their needs. So the way that is being marketed to a younger generation has shifted to do it a little bit differently. It's very interesting. They're skeptical of slick marketing promotions. Doesn't interest them at all. It's a different thing that they are looking for. But they're super consumers. It's just kind of the way they are. You have a comment?
Yeah, they're very analytical. When
oh yeah.
I'm just speaking of my kids.
Oh yeah.
When I'll say, oh yeah, just go get that. Oh no. And then they go through the five things. You mm-hmm. know, they have all yep. these things. That, oh, the criteria. Yep. Oh, whether or not I'm going to get this. I'm like,
yeah.
Whoa, I would've just got it, you know, yeah. or whatever.
And one of the things that you can see of consumerism and on this level is the green aspect of that is the marketing ploy now because it's a need. How do you actually get them to, and they see that as a need of being responsible with this planet. So anything green is actually a marketing ploy somewhat, but that is kind of a way that they pull in on that. So it's just interesting to see that. Another thing that they are, and this is kind of just a given, they're mediavores. This generation is addicted to media. It's not uncommon for them to be doing their homework, listening to a CD, watching television, communicating online at the same time. Mm-hmm. Maybe not listening to a CD, listening to their iPod, but they're doing all those things at the same time. All of it. They're giving a new definition to multitasking. That's just who they are. They're mediavores in that level. Those are just, I think, how many things were those? One, two, three, eight different things about kind of who they are in their, I guess, their makeup. Any questions on these? To explain a little bit, I think these are some of the things that we would probably say, yeah, this is stuff we kind of know about who they are. The thing is, we're aware that the young adults as a whole are not generally inside church. They're kind of a lost generation in the sense of we have like youth group, senior high, junior high, and then we have a gap, mostly. We have a gap within the church with these college age and young careers. Where are they and why are they not there? Here's six reasons millennials say they're leaving the church. This is them giving the input of this is why they don't return or come back. Whether they're right or wrong, this is the reasons that they give. And number one, one of the things that they respond to and say is that churches, they're just really overprotective. As Christians, they express the desire for their faith in Christ to connect to the world they live in. However, much of their experience in Christianity feels stifling, fear-based, and risk-aversive. They say 25% of them say that Christians demonize everything outside of the church. 23% indicate that this completely or mostly describes their experience. That outside is bad, inside is good, and they're looking at that with a skeptical eye there. 22% other perceptions of this category include church ignoring the problems of the real world. So 22% see that the church is ignoring the problems that's going on around them, and since they're ignoring that, they really don't like that. 18% say that my church is too concerned that movies, music, and video games are harmful. for better or for worse. 18% have that reflection. So the result, their mindset is, well, churches are overprotective on that level. Reason number two that they give, teens and 20-somethings experience, their experience of Christianity is a bit shallow to them. 31%, one-third, said that church is boring. 31% of them said that just on a level, church just is boring.
They're comparing it to the media.
I know. You're probably comparing it to a lot of other things, but that's their response of what they see.
Well, I think it goes back to one of your other points of consumerism as an identifying thing. And that's not just about going to the store and buying things. It's about, you know, when you're a consumer, everything is meant to meet your needs. And so that mentality comes into church as well.
It does bleed in.
And this is, you know, when it doesn't meet needs. Then yeah. And again, not a criticism. That's just...
It's an observation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's why it's not an easy thing to say, oh, well, if the thing is boring, let's make it not boring. Well, I don't know if that's necessarily what we need to do, but it's also what they're saying. So it's something to identify. 24%, one quarter of these young adults say that faith is not relevant to my career or interests, which sometimes scare me and shocks me. And I actually have heard this from somewhat my young adults too. They kind of have that mentality that Christianity, their faith, is not relevant to their career or interests, so that's not something they want to invest a ton of time into. Our 23% say that the Bible is not taught clearly or often enough, which that statement there is kind of shocking. They will say that the Bible is not taught clearly or often enough. They want to be challenged. They want to be engaged. They don't want this light stuff where it's really not addressing anything. They actually are interested in learning. So that's an interesting part of who they are. You could probably find others that don't necessarily want that, but they do want to be engaged. And then 20% say of these young adults who attended a church as a teenager said that God seems missing from my experience of church. And that's 20% said that God seems missing from my experience of church.
It seems like some big, big mega churches, I don't know, I'm just saying, you know, that they get a lot of these young people in here. Are, you know, millennials in there, but then sometimes we think that these big, big, huge churches are not teaching the Word of God in a Bible study form. So I don't know, sometimes I think that's a kind of, I don't know.
It seems, yeah, I know.
I have a question of what you're saying there, what the research is, because, you know, they're not being taught the Bible. Well, then why are these big, big churches, huge churches with thousands, tens of thousands of people thriving? It's like these millennials are getting into these churches, but the churches are not really teaching the Word.
It's like a rock concert. You want to know where all the people are, where the activity is.
You could probably talk about mega churches and their composition and what attracts people to them, and I think that you could do that for all generations because there's probably stuff that pull in there, and a lot of it is the media and consumerism mentality there. One of the things that I, and this is maybe getting ahead of ourselves, they don't necessarily want the flashy rock concert stuff. There are quite a few young adults that will actually say they will reject that and go to a more traditional route, which is, in my mind, sometimes surprising, because you think that they would, but they want something authentic and real. Okay. So it they might be present, but we might want to, I don't know, it's something deeper that they also want.
You can't generalize.
That's the thing. You can't. Yeah. It's a hard.
You've got a lot that want to go one way and a lot that go the other way.
Yep.
I had seen a similar statistic to what you're saying too. Is that they, you know, some churches they think we need more, the rock concert thing and more flashy and more lights. But what I heard was that the millennials want to see the Bible answering the questions that they are actually facing in their real life, not just theories about the Trinity, which, may not, they might like, well, how is that going to change my life? But, you know, actually seeing, you know, if I'm facing this problem with my friends or in school or personally, you know, how does the Bible speak to that and solve that problem?
Yeah, that's maybe the exiles that are kind of speaking in there.
I had an interesting conversation with my son when he came, and he said that they want to move to our area, but if they did move, he's not sure he would want to go to our church. And I was like, that hurt me at first. And he said, I love the church, I love the preaching, I love the depth. But he said, and the music, I thought it was all about the music. I said, well, you know, you guys can change up the music. You can come in and he said, no, it's not the music either. He goes, it's, there are eight kids my age here. He goes, I would come and where are, you know, we've got the whole span, we've got the whole generation, but we don't have college.
Mm-hmm.
And so he would come in and he would be the token college age kid,
mm-hmm.
token 22 year old, and mm-hmm. you don't know what to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
Why are, don't we have that group in our church? We don't.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure why.
It's a tough thing to address. It really is. And we could, I'll continue just because there's, I have a lot of information, and I think some of the things that, I think one of the things that towards the end, there are buttons you could push that I think would probably help us know how to like form an environment that probably would be promotional to young adults walking in and saying, I can actually connect. Because that's actually one of the biggest things. If you want to know what they need, connection. That's maybe one of the base things that they will need to have. So, and you can maybe pipe in if you have any other comments, because I don't know. Anyways, I'll go on. Reason number three, this is some of their ideas churches come across as antagonistic to science. This might be a product of the university, but one of the reasons young adults feel disconnected from church or faith is the tension they feel between Christianity and science, the most common perceptions of this area. 35% say they're that Christians are too confident that they know all the answers. That's one of the things that they kind of come across saying. This is something they don't necessarily like. Humility is probably one of the aspects that they sniff out. Like the sniffing out of the media or like consumerism, they'll sniff out some of this too because they are pretty perceptive. It's kind of shocking. 29%, 3 out of 10 young adults with a Christian background feel that churches are out of step with the scientific world we live in. That's just the way that they respond. Another quarter embrace the perception that Christianity is anti-science. That's 25%. 23% say that they've been turned off by the creation versus evolution debate. So that's, I think, a little bit more of an older research because that's an older topic. But that was something that they were responding to, that tension, that debate there. For better or for worse, that was some of their things that they kind of responded to. They just think that that's something the church is. I don't know if we need to change that, but that's one of their responses. Reason number four, young Christians, church experiences related to sexuality often simplistic and judgmental. Now, this is a hard one. With unfettered access to digital pornography and immersed in a culture that values hypersexuality over wholeness, teen and 20-something Christians are struggling with how to live meaningful lives in terms of sex and sexuality. One of the significant tensions for many young believers is how they live up to the church's expectations of chastity and sexual purity in this culture, especially as this age of first marriage is now commonly delayed to the late 20s. Research indicates that most young Christians are as sexually active as their non-Christian peers, even though they are more conservative in their attitudes about sexuality. So the way we respond to their actions is probably very important. Doesn't mean you compromise on truth here, but this is an issue that you're dealing with a culture that is a lot more loose than it should be, and they're a part of it. 17% say that they have made mistakes and feel judged in church because of them. They've made mistakes. Now the question is how to respond to them. 40% say teachings on sexuality and birth control are out of date. Now that would probably be the for better or worse. That might be the worst that they're responding there. But their attitude of the way that we have addressed this as a church in general, simplistic and judgmental. To be honest with you, junior hires need to be talked about this issue. Junior hires. And even then, you have to get them, I think, in fifth and sixth grade now, starting to get input. Junior hires are met with this. And we need to be a lot more aware of that because that's happening. And that's scary because it's not supposed to be that way. But that's the culture that we're living in. So the way that we handle and talk about this, especially with these youth, is important because they're met with this. And so you need to engage with it.
Now you feel like it would be an older topic.
You would hope.
Or an adult topic, but it's not.
You would hope. It's not. It isn't. Mm-hmm. And it's scary that way. But and the response can't be, let's talk about it once and then walk away, or even briefly. This is where you actually have to engage in bigger conversation, because daily they're getting that from their junior hires, other friends, and the world around them. The teachers aren't necessarily helping. They're basically saying, here you go. It's so you're hearing, they're hearing that constantly. We're not talking about it really ever. So when we respond, it's kind of a sweeping statement, and they recognize it, saying there's something there that needs to, I don't know, need to engage that. That's an issue that I see as like a youth pastor and young adult that I'd like to meet a little bit more, but that's different. Reason number five, they wrestle with exclusive nature of Christianity. The younger Americans have been shaped by a culture that esteems open-mindedness, tolerance, and acceptance. Today's youth and young adults are also about the most eclectic generation in the American history in terms of race, ethnicity, sexuality, religion, technological tools, and source of authority. This is where the diversity plays in, but then this is where the cultural relevancy of like the relevant truth plays in. 29% said that churches are afraid of the beliefs of other faiths, and an identical proportion felt that they are forced to choose between my faith and my friends. So, yeah, you're talking about relativistic ideas here. 22% say that church is like a country club, only for insiders. Now, I think we probably would say that we might not need, might not be able to compromise on some of these areas, but I think this is one of their comments that they have. Reason number six, the church feels unfriendly to those who doubt. Young adults with Christian experience say that the church is not a place that allows them to express doubts. They do not feel safe admitting that sometimes Christianity does not make sense. In addition, many feel that the church's response to doubt is trivial. Some of the perceptions in this regard include 36% say that not being able to ask the most pressing questions, they are not able to ask the most pressing questions in church. 36% of them kind of feel that way. And they're also having significant intellectual doubts about my faith. They feel marginalized when they have significant intellectual doubts about their faith. That's 23% say that. 18% say does not help with depression. The church does not help with depression or other emotional problems they experience. So this I find somewhat true. The challenging or questioning of our faith is somewhat pushed. That would probably be a kind of a fair assessment that they might make. But I don't know what you guys think about the doubtness thing. They don't feel like they can doubt.
I feel like that's true. I feel like when you give people permission to, well, when you admit as a leader or pastor or whatever, like, I don't really have, you know, it all together. I think for so long, pastors were trained to be the guys with all the answers.
Yeah.
And that was their job, is to give answers. And I think this generation isn't really looking for that. They're looking for people who will question along with them and be okay with, just because you question doesn't mean that you don't have faith, you know.
Yep.
There's plenty of people in the Bible who question what God was doing, and that was all part of the gig.
Yep.
So no. Giving people permission to doubt and still be a part, I think, is really important.
Yep. And if you don't like the doubt word, then say it, they're challenging their faith or their thoughts. And they go through a period of where they're challenged. Don't feel accepted, but when they're wondering, is God really here? And I mean, that's a big question that's scary to ask. And if you're not allowed to ask it, there, it's the process goes. Then they'll just walk away because they don't have it addressed, and people won't let them ask these questions. And they want, as Jim is saying, they don't want me necessarily to say, well, here's the answer. Although I do have some youth that get mad at me because I don't give them the answer. They just want to have the experience with it. They want to share the experience in going through the life and going through life and in addressing some of these issues. So in the process of doubt, to be able to walk alongside them and to kind of give them a next step and be like, yeah, it's valid, it's okay, we can do this, and here's some resources, and here's some help. But helping them along the way, empowering them to actually explore and to attain is I think, important.
Get answers to their doubts.
Yeah. But let them have it. That's one of those things. Yeah, they sometimes don't like that either. Any questions on those areas? This is the area where I would say, here's 10 questions that can help our churches reach young adults. Here's kind of the way if we live, or this is the way that our church operates. This is probably where we have the disconnection. This is probably where we could push the wrong buttons, or we could foster some place where they could grow and connect. Now, all of this is questions that they have, or I mean questions for us as a people, but also as a church. And the first question that you see is our vision compelling? Is our vision compelling in church? Is there a strong resistance? And this is kind of where this goes. Oh, did I miss one? Oops, sorry. My bad. I was like, I missed one. First question is there a strong resistance to change non-essentials? That's our first question. Is there a strong resistance to change non-essentials? And this is where I'll probably say this falls underneath the category of traditions. Is there a strong resistance to you don't want to change traditions?
Can you give an example, like concrete examples?
Concrete examples of this?
Yeah, just one.
Only
one thing.
Tradition of your church.
Like the time of the service.
Could be the time of the service. It could be
music.
It could be music. It could be like a program activity. It could be, I mean, it's just a lot of different things. Outreach. I'll maybe go with this. Outreach. Is there a strong resistance to do the type of outreach that you are? If you put outreach along the lines of just attractional model, where you have to come to the church. And I'll probably put Awana and VBS in the attractional model of people have to come to us. And then you bring up an idea where millennials will say, I would like to do a non-traditional way of outreach, which is let's do a 5K run for our neighborhood. And it's not necessarily a Bible speaking, like here's a gospel presentation outreach, but this is a let's get involved in our community and do a 5K. Is there a strong resistance to say, no, we can't do that because we have all these other things going on. We have this program, and we can't actually like float this now because it's too much. If there's a strong resistance to that, that's hard for millennials to swallow. Really hard for them to swallow. It's basically...
They would say, let's do the 5K, forget about VBS.
They would be willing to say that. Millennials are removed from the era of doing everything because this is how we've done it. If that's the response that you give someone, this is how we've done it.
Okay.
Literally, I don't like that response. It doesn't really sit well with millennials. It just doesn't. The best way I could maybe show it to you is you have the idea of two fists. One would be truth, and this is where I would say you don't compromise this. You have to have a strong hand with truth. You don't open it to say, well, truth can be relative and things can kind of come in and go. Truth is truth. We know that when God revealed it, it's going to remain. But if we have the other hand where it's method and we hold on to method and say we won't change, we won't consider, we won't do things different, then we're missing a lot of what the young adults will not only help and do and tap into, but to reach a lot of these generations, the neighborhoods. You have to have an open hand to method, where you're able to assess to say, okay, well, this is something different, new. Is this something that reaches who we are and what we want to do? And then to have kind of flexibility of saying, well, we can let this thing end. Sunrises and sunsets, that's one of those things that I think they're really willing to have, a sunset on something. If they actually see, well, that was great, but now it's losing its effectiveness. Now, what can we do differently? And are you willing to actually open this? I think Rush Creek has a model. They've changed from VBS to kids games. And I think that's because they've finally opened their hand to say, we'll adjust. Who they want to reach, I think, is those neighborhood kids. And the way that they found that they could do that is not having this VBS come to us, but a kids games, let's go to your place, and not necessarily have all this Christianese speech, but that's an open hand, I think. In my mind, that was them willing to like switch and go in a different direction, which I think is pretty healthy. It's scary, especially for our mindset as church, because we do appreciate traditions and they're strong. And it's scary to open our hand up and see something new come in because you don't know where it's going to go and how it will go.
So it's programs. It's like different yes. kind of programs.
Yes, okay. Mainly programs. Okay. Open hand to programs. Do you have a comment? I don't know. Did you have a comment? No, okay.
With that example of the kids' games, we would never, ever be able to have a VBS control it within our walls. So we went out to a school. They've gone to the fire stations and all kinds of different things in the program of VBS. And they're still getting the Bible.
Yep.
And things like that.
Yep.
You know, we're reaching 400 kids.
Yep. And that's because, you adjusted to, I think what I would say is reflecting a culture that you can reach. And that is a scary thing to do, but it's a very, really cool thing to do, because I'm hearing some of the stories that you guys are doing, and I'm like, wow, I'd love to see that. Because you're in a community, and that's a very important aspect.
Yeah, when they went to the fire station, all of a sudden, we're going to have them come back. And then the firemen said, we have to get together now. That department, what are we going to do next year?
Yeah. And some of those things where you're, the part of a value to the young adults too is you're engaging inside of a community. And I think they value that just as much as meeting at a church. They like the idea of getting in a community and doing those type of things, because social justice is an insanely important, like, it's a huge deal.
And the drop zone that we do.
That is another one of those examples. Well, we're going to move on because 15 more minutes? Is that what it is?
Okay. Yeah, like
12 more minutes. Okay, well, let's move quickly. Is our vision compelling? This is a question. Do we have a vision that is compelling? If we as a church or as a people don't have a vision that's compelling, it's lacking or it's non-existent, then you really are not going to go anywhere with them. Quote would be, if your vision doesn't compel, move, or stir people, your vision is too small. That's from Craig, I don't know how to say his last name, but Craig.
Groschel.
But is your vision compelling? And this is more of a church-wide thing. Are you actually achieving, going, doing, and having an idea of where you're going to the future? Vision is important for these, for millennials. This is a question that is a big one. Is mediocrity the expectation? Quite simply, the generation that we're talking about, the young adults, they're not content with mediocrity. That is not something that's going to sit with them. They're very optimistic about their ability to excite change in the world. Good or bad, they have a strong desire to do something extraordinary. Failure is not going to drive the train. This also seems like a foreign concept to many in previous generations, but millennials are not scared to fail. And they believe churches should operate with a similar mindset. So they don't want to just settle. They want to try, and they want to do big things. The 5K example is actually one of the young adults' idea. And when I heard it, I was like, oh man, that's huge, because we're a small church and we're not many people, but it's exactly what we want to do. And and everyone was like, yes, let's do it. And we actually started going into it, but construction happened right in front of our church, so we can't do it. So, but it's something they dream. They can dream, and they want to have a vision that's compelling. So they will. They have a very optimistic view of how they can do things. Another question is, do we have a paternalistic approach to leading young adults? Basically, if you have a young adult group, do you treat them as a valid group in your church, or do you treat them as a young, old youth group, or a, what would you call it, another youth group, basically? Don't. Please don't, because that hurts.
You can make choices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you give them, don't do micromanagement. Allow them to lead, value their ideas, their insights, the way they see the world. Don't just view them as another young adult group, or another youth group, because that will not help them. That will chase them away. That will hurt them.
You need to start doing that early on, though,
yes.
Before they get to that.
Yeah. Yes. And it's a mentality, and it's not something we try, and it's not something that we necessarily do, but the way that your language can reflect this. the way that you question what they do can reflect this. And it might not even be a bad thing to say, what do you want to do? But when you ask that question or how you ask that question can very much so reflect how you treat them. Because if you ask them, oh, we're so surprised you have this research done on your position here, they can look at that going, yeah, we wouldn't think about doing this lightly. Did you expect that?
We had a girl, well, she said that she wanted to do a Christian prom at church. Because she didn't want to do the prom, whatever their prom was. She didn't mm-hmm. want to do that, but she wanted to have one at church.
Mm-hmm.
We were like, wow, we've never heard of that before.
Yeah. So their ideas of doing things are very strong, but they also, they don't want to be treated as young kids. They want to have that empowerment and the trust. And it doesn't mean you don't ask some of those questions. It's the way you ask them. They'll sniff out what your mentality is, whether you even realize it the way you're treating them or not. Here's another one. Do we have a pervasive insider-focused mentality? That's more of we're focused in on who we are as a church. If you have a pervasive insider-focused mentality of we're keeping who we have and where we have established, they will also sniff that out, and that's not necessarily their thing. They're hugely into social gospel, or social justice, not social gospel, sorry. They're hugely into social justice. They have concerns about what's going on inside the world. Quote that I have here, when the faithful saturate their schedules with Christian events at Christian venues with Christian people, the world has a hard time believing we hold the rest of the world in high esteem. And this is true for young adults. They don't necessarily just want these Christian events, Christian friends, Christian. They want an engagement with the community, which is why when you do the things like I see with the kids games and with Drop Zone, it resonates with my idea of we're in the community. So that's I guess an example there. Another question is, do we value authenticity and transparency? This is basically what Jim was talking about. We don't want you to have all the answers. Young adults don't want the church. They don't want pastors to have all the answers. They want to have honesty, transparency, and the willingness to say we're not all together. And if you make yourself look like you have all things all together, it pushes them away. They will sniff it out. They're so good at this. They know when you're putting on a show, and at the same time, they value honesty and transparency a lot. I don't know how else really emphasize this. This is big for them. And if this is one thing that you could do differently, I would say that's huge. In relationships with young adults, the transparency and honesty to say my life isn't all together is impactful, because they will go, really? Well, let's talk. And they will engage with who you are, because their lives are not all together, and they're looking. They are so looking for ways that they can grow, and they know that they don't have all the answers, and they want other people that go through life the same way, because another aspect of who they are is mentoring important to you? Is disciple-making important to you? They want it so badly, and that's why being open and honest and transparent with them is important, because when you are, then they can latch on to a mentoring or even a discipleship-making process. They really want this. I was going to say something else about that. But yeah, they really do want a mentoring relationship. Oh, they want it in, if you can put it into like the category of career, because career is also a high importance to them. If you also put mentoring as with someone, like someone who's a businessman, and you have another mentor who is qualified, who is also a businessman, who is also open and transparent, that combination will be even better, because they look for advancement in career, and if you can involve that with the spiritual life with someone inside the church that can do kind of both at the same time, I think that's a win-win for a church. Regardless, mentoring is important, that they do value. Another question, and this is culture viewed as an enemy of the church? Is culture viewed as an enemy? The next Christians, I think, well, is culture viewed as an enemy of the church is a big one, because I know we see things in culture that are not necessarily good, but this is a thing about young adults where they'll identify and see things that are positive about their culture, like diversity and the way that the culture addresses it, and they'll see that as a positive. And if you generalize to say culture is all bad, then you kind of lost them on some level. So that is, it's a danger. The next Christians believe that Christ's death and resurrection were not only meant to save people from something, he wanted to save Christians to something. And it's not just to be away from the world and away from culture, it's to engage it and be a part of the people around them. So it's not to separate ourselves from culture and make culture look so bad and have our own, it's to engage it and to be a part of it and to also, yeah, to be in it in some way, not necessarily to be, you know, consumed by it, but you know what I mean. Another question is, is community valued? Is community valued? This is a non-negotiable. Community and connections, relationships are super important for this group. You need it. Another question is the church always a source of division and not unity? Traditionally, churches do tend to divide and kind of draw lines. And as if that's a constant theme, that doesn't jive well with their mindset, because they do have that mindset of wanting to share experience and share things with others and the cultural relevancy, or at least the relevant nature of their mindset. If church is always divisive and dividing and there's no unity, they'll walk away from that. The last things that I have, and maybe I'll just walk through really quickly because we're about to end in time. Five ways to connect with young adults. The first one is to make room for meaningful relationships. Let's talk about connection as important. Make room for meaningful relationships. Another one is to teach cultural discernment. It's just to help them engage with their own culture, knowing what to pick out from it, what to not, knowing that they can still be a part of it and be around it, but not necessarily be completely consumed or affected by it. Another one is, that I was always saying, is mentoring, discipleship. I like mentoring. I also really value discipleship. So create mentoring or reverse mentoring opportunities where they can be connected with other people in careers or just other adults. That would be important. Another one is vocation to discipleship, kind of along the same lines. Have them be able to connect both those ideas there. And the final one is facilitate a connection with Jesus. That's the authenticity that they really do crave. Help them be able to connect with Jesus in their culture and in their career and in the church. So those are just five ways. This is, I know, general, not necessarily very specific. Sorry, I didn't get into any of the how to do things. I can tell you one thing, if you really are asking how to create a young adult ministry group, you have to have the young adults there that will be willing to do it. And if you empower young adults that are in your church that have a capability, maturity to do it, and you say, go do it, we'll help, and we trust, it'll happen. It does happen. I mean, they might need some guidance, but if you have the young adults there that are willing to get connected, and you give them the opportunity to and say that we want you to and we'll help you with whatever we can, and you let them, I believe that they will find a way to at least do some connection, because they deeply desire connection. You can help fashion.
They want a job.
Yeah, they do want to be.
If you don't give them a job, they're not going to come.
Yeah. You have a question? Yeah,
does the age of the youth leader have any impact?
Age of the youth leader, as in for a senior high youth group you're talking about?
Or junior high, or,
this could be independent of that. This is a church obligation, not necessarily a youth leader.
Oh, no, this is a church obligation. Right. I mean, I can have my own mindset, my own mentality, my way I do things, and it'll probably be very, very, very helpful. But if you do some of these things, like if the church on a whole is not answering these questions properly or doing the wrong thing, it will drive them away.
Yeah.
I mean, then you'll have a system where your youth or your young adults are connected not to the church, but to the pastor. And in the long run, that's not healthy. And in the long run, that's not my mission to do. I don't want to be that.
Yeah, you can't necessarily put this burden on the youth pastor. I mean, no. The youth pastor can help.
Yeah.
Senior pastor's got to have a big handle on it. And
top
the church
down.
Itself
yeah.
has to say,
yeah.
we want to have these kids succeed
yeah.
in church
yeah.
and figure out a way to do it.
Yeah.
Well, we only have 50 people in our church, but we don't have a youth pastor.
Right.
The age of the youth group leader. Should be a 30-year-old or a 60-year-old. It doesn't matter.
I don't know if it completely matters as long as you love them. I've noticed that if you give them the value of time and love, they really do respond. The thing that will be empowering is if you not only love them, but then you actually invest to say you are not only loved, I have confidence that you can actually lead. And then when you start to empower them to be leaders themselves, then I think you also gain a lot of momentum to
You're
grow.
Talking about the young adult leader, not the
Oh, the young adult leader?
Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Sorry.
Both
ways, I think.
Junior high and senior high,
yeah. I think if you do empower them to... Yeah, it's a process, though. It's nice to have closer age. Really is.
I would think, as a youth.
It is.
Yeah.
They do.
That.
If you don't... Yeah. As I think we've had other sessions, you don't have... Like, we've heard, you don't have to be young to be able to connect with these groups. They do. Authenticity, and if you give, show them love, but truly.
And they have to have respect for the person who's doing it.
Mm-hmm. And that takes time sometimes. That's why I'm learning. Fifth and sixth grade is when you grab them. Junior high, you can still kind of grab them. If they're a homeschool group community, you probably could. But senior high, it's rough. It takes so much time, and it's like you're trying to grab them from, it's like, please come back. But junior high is when I saw that if you get them there, you value them there, they'll continue because they are loyal to you. But then if you start empowering them, then whoo, you got something to like, probably keep going. Anyways. Any other comments? The time's, I think, over. What time does the session start?
11.
Okay. It is 9:45. So, any other comments, questions? Mm-hmm.